The Columbia River is the biggest river in Oregon and the biggest river in Washington, too. But did you know that it actually may have saved the world from the Nazi menace during World War II? The fact that it was possible to put dams on it and get incredible amounts of electrical power made it possible for the U.S. to crank out aluminum in quantities that made it possible for us to pretty much destroy the most powerful air force in the world and win that war before Hitler had a chance to drop a bomb on somebody. I'll tell you the story in just a second. First of all, let me introduce myself. My name's Finn J.D. John. I write a weekly newspaper column that runs in about a dozen newspapers around the state right now. It's called Offbeat Oregon History. Details about that in a minute, or at offbeatoregon.com. But the important thing to know is that you're listening to a column from our archives right now, one that was first published on October 1st, 2008. Yes, indeed, this is the oldest one in the kitty. I'm going to read it to you now. If you'd like more information about the column, the podcast, or the feeds that are associated with it, stay tuned. When President Franklin D. Roosevelt launched the project to build the Bonneville and Grand Coulee dams, he was thinking about jobs. He had no idea at the time that those jobs would, a decade or so later, directly result in the world being saved from the machinations of the crackpot German chancellor by making it possible for America and its allies to challenge and defeat the world's best air force and quite possibly forestalling nuclear war. All of that was in the unforeseeable future, though, in 1933 when construction began. Originally, the plan was to build just one dam on the Columbia River. The government settled on Grand Coulee in Washington State. But the Oregon delegation in Washington, D.C. got very upset about this and begged Roosevelt to change his mind and to favor the Bonneville site in Oregon. Figuring two dams would create more jobs than one dam, Roosevelt gave the green light to both projects. By the end of the 1930s, the dams were in service, churning out electric power that was basically free. A side effect of this, by the way, was the construction of thousands of homes in Oregon and Washington equipped with the notoriously inefficient but very easy to install electric ceiling heat. You know, that radiant kind that made the top of your head warm and kept your feet cold? Maybe you even live in one of those houses. But the two dams generated far, far more power than the U.S. could use in the 1930s, especially the sparsely populated northwest corner thereof. Transmission lines were built, but they could only take the power so far. And electricity can't be stored, not in anything like an efficient manner. It has to be used the instant it's created. It looked like the main benefit of the dams was the thousands of jobs they'd created during the Depression. Two dams weren't doing anything that one dam couldn't have done, and even just one dam wouldn't have done a whole lot more than a grid connection from Hoover Dam might have accomplished for a lot less money. Although, of course, we weren't calling it Hoover Dam back then because President Roosevelt didn't like ex-President Hoover very much. But that's another story. So that was the case until December 7th, 1941. As you likely know, as the war went on, America's output of war equipment, especially airplanes, got bigger every year until the hapless Axis powers were completely overwhelmed with hostile, to them, tanks, planes, and artillery. By 1945, the output was staggering, and it was topped off with a pair of war-ending nuclear bombings in Japan. The two Columbia River dams played a key role, an irreplaceable role, in all of these things. The seemingly unlimited electric power was just what America's young aluminum industry needed. Airplanes and their armor were made from aluminum refined in plants very close to the dam. Aluminum requires huge amounts of electricity to extract it from bauxite ore. And it's no coincidence that Hanford, where the bombs used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were built, is situated on the Columbia River near the dams. Nuclear weapons research and production requires enormous amounts of electricity, too. Perhaps these needs could have been sated without the two job creation projects on the Columbia. Perhaps then Boeing and Douglas would have gotten their start somewhere in the Midwest, where airplane culture was so much more developed. But also, perhaps, just perhaps, our production abilities would have fallen short of the challenge that was before us, and we would have lost that war. The Germans were chillingly close to developing a working nuclear bomb when they were forced to surrender in 1945. There's some evidence that they would have done so if it hadn't been for some highly skilled Norwegian commandos who snuck in and blew up their heavy water refinery in 1943. Furthermore, without all those aluminum airplanes flying over Germany, dropping bombs on factories and ore refineries, they might very well have beaten the Allies to it. Did Roosevelt's Make Work Project in Oregon save the world? We'll probably never know for sure, but that's probably okay. That's the end of today's column, the oldest column in our archive, a classic beauty from 2008. If you're listening for the first time, here's some information about the podcast and about Offbeat Oregon History, the newspaper column it's part of. Offbeat Oregon History tells stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about, the ones everyone's forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of shanghaied sailors and skid road bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. It's a weekly column, and I've been writing it since 2008, so right now there are about 175 published episodes in the kitty. So every weekday morning, I pull one of those episodes up, put it out on the daily RSS feeds, one in text and pictures for your newsreader, and one in audio only for your podcatcher. You can read any archive column and subscribe to either daily feed by going to the website at offbeatoregon.com. Both feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a tablet or a netbook too, or a computer as well. All columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening, and do drop me a line if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of coffee. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. Have a great day.